So first of all, this is a highly charged process these days. It's very emotional for families. It's very stressful for families. It's not a personal process. That's the first thing I sit kids down and I say, so for so many years, everyone's been telling you, you've got to prepare for college and you have to do this and you have to do that. And the reality is, this isn't really about you. This is really about what colleges need to create this diversified class. So when you talk about majors, Lisa, like, you know, every other kid you talk to this day, today is like, I want to major in computer science, or I want to major in psychology, or I want to major in you know, political science or biology. Those are all really impacted majors. Colleges could fill their classes 20 times over with just computer science majors. That really wouldn't be that interesting. Wouldn't be that great to go to school with all computer science majors, would it? You know?
Today, we're diving into a crucial aspect of the college admissions journey, understanding how universities' intricate web of institutional priorities shapes who gets admitted. I'm thrilled to be joined by Allie Beaumont, an independent educational consultant who brings a wealth of experience in guiding families through this complex process. In our conversation, Allie sheds light on common institutional priorities that drive admissions decisions and may help or hurt your teen when they're applying. From managing enrollment numbers to recruiting athletes and musicians, we'll uncover these and other factors beyond your students' control that colleges consider in addition to acceptance rates, GPA, test scores, extracurriculars, and more. Understanding these priorities is essential for managing your teen's expectations and not only building the right college list, but also applying at the right time. So if you've ever wondered why well-qualified students are often not admitted and how this impacts your teen's chances of admission, this episode's for you. I'm Lisa Marker Robbins, and I want to welcome you to College and Career Clarity, a Flourish Coaching production. Let's dive right in to a great conversation. Allie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm very excited to be here. I've been a big fan of yours for a long time, and I'm happy to be on.
Well, it goes both ways. And then I was like, how have I not had Allie on? And we were talking in a group that we're in about this topic that I think as independent counselors, we're so close to, we forget that the average family doesn't know it. And I know, I believe it is one of the most important fundamental pieces of college admissions that parents and students need to understand, and that's institutional priorities.
So, yeah, I think a lot of kids, when they are applying to college, they're so consumed with their profile and who they are. Colleges are really way more concerned with creating a class as a whole. And so sometimes it has nothing to do with you that you didn't get in. It's that you that your profile wasn't needed by the college to create the class as a whole.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. It's like you could be, I say all the time, particularly for, you know, very popular majors, the colleges, particularly with popular majors, because that's my area of interest, they could enroll many times over freshman classes that could be wildly successful on their campus, but they just don't meet the priorities of the institution, which we can kind of get into what different priorities are. But like, why, you know, you're working with a lot of families in your organization. Why do you feel like it's important for families to understand this idea of institutional priorities?
So first of all, this is a highly charged process these days. It's very emotional for families. It's very stressful for families. It's not a personal process. That's the first thing I sit kids down and I say, so for so many years, everyone's been telling you, you've got to prepare for college and you have to do this and you have to do that. And the reality is, this isn't really about you. This is really about what colleges need to create this diversified class. So when you talk about majors, Lisa, like, you know, every other kid you talk to this day, today is like, I want to major in computer science, or I want to major in psychology, or I want to major in you know, political science or biology. Those are all really impacted majors. Colleges could fill their classes 20 times over with just computer science majors. that really wouldn't be that interesting. It wouldn't be that great to go to school with all computer science majors, would it? You
know? No, it would not. And you know what? And that word impacted majors, again, one of a term I think that we're both very up close and personal with, like, how do you define, I know how I defined it because I'm zeroed in on majors. How do you explain impacted major to a family? And I would add nursing to your impacted majors.
Oh, 100. But there are more than what I just mentioned.
Yeah. And I would say it depends on the university, what the impacted majors are going to be, right? Because like my daughter just graduated from Cincinnati last Saturday at the time that we're recording this. The honorary doctorate this year was the guy who started Allbirds Footwear. And he has a fantastic bio, had been a professional soccer player, came from New Zealand. Well, he graduated from DAP, Design, Art, Architecture, and Planning at Cincinnati, which at Cincinnati, that's a very impacted college and the majors there. But those majors are not necessarily impacted in another university. So how would you define impacted?
So that's a great point. It's typically their most popular major, or especially if it's a major that a student has to apply directly into. So at a lot of colleges now, computer science has become a direct, application. Nursing is a great example of direct application. And it really does change from college to college. If you think about the colleges in DC, political science is really impacted.
Yeah.
Our youngest son went to Kenyon College in Ohio. They're known for their particularly good writing program. English is an impacted major there. At most colleges, English is not an impacted major. They'd like more English majors.
Yes.
So I think of it as colleges have professors in every area, and students really learn better when they're learning with people who are not exactly like them. So they want kids who are studying lots of different subjects. And so that's where impacted comes into play too. And just for families to know, a way to check this to kind of see what could possibly be impacted somewhere is to go on College Navigator, which is the National Center for Education Statistics. And there is a tab in there where you can actually look up how many kids graduated with a degree in certain majors. It's got like a year or two lag, but you can see those numbers and you can see like, oh my God, at this school, everyone's studying economics.
Well, and I actually shot a video on this. I'm glad you brought that up. I'll link to our video in the show notes on just, it's the steps 1, 2, and 3 on how to get to what you just said, because we can say it's over there on, collegenavigator.gov, and then somebody gets there and goes, how do I get there?
Right.
So we have a step-by-step video I'll put in there, but there's two ways to use it. I shot the video because I said, hey, some of you are thinking about a major at a college where there was only one kid that graduated with that major last year, and that school is not, they might offer it, but that does not mean they're reputable. And then you're saying like, yes. And on the other end of the continuum, this can show you like, oh my word, this is going to be an impacted major because it's in the top three of their most popular majors at this university. So we'll link to that in the show notes because there's both ways.
You made a great point. I had a student a couple of years ago who wanted to study linguistics, and she kept saying, I want to be at a really small school. Well, for anyone who knows a lot about college majors, linguistics is a very small major at many, many places. And in order to get a group of 50 students who were studying linguistics, she had to go bigger and bigger. And I always say to kids, it's not the size of the school, it's what you want to do there that can make it feel bigger or smaller. And that's a perfect example.
Absolutely. Well, we have a previous episode on like the hidden value of honors colleges at large universities to make it smaller. So that's another great example. I'll link to that one in the show notes too. So, okay. So one institutional priority could be we have these impacted majors that are highly coveted. We're going to have to turn a lot of kiddos away. So to understand that might affect you getting in. What are some other, whys of what could be an institutional priority?
Why don't we start with schools want kids on their athletic teams, in their school bands, in their school choirs, on their debate teams, in their theater productions.
Yeah.
So they might That's a pretty common one that most people realize is that there's recruited athletes. I don't know if they quite realize there's also recruited kids like who play some obscure instrument, right?
Right, but there is.
But there is. And so that's the first thing. They also want a class that's diversified in many different ways because it's been proven, again, that students learn best when they learn among a diversified group. So that comes into play in many ways. It comes into play no longer necessarily by ethnicity because of the Supreme Court ban on affirmative action, but colleges are actually still pretty committed to having a diversified class of in ethnicity. They're certainly committed to having a diversified group in terms of socioeconomic background, in terms of geographic location. They want students from all 50 states and as many different international countries as possible. They want students who come from rural or underserved locations. They want a good gender balance between men and women. I don't think that many people realize that we have way more women going to college now than men, and that at many colleges, it's actually easier to get in as a male student. But then that flips, because then there's some tech schools where it's easier as a female student because we want to encourage women to be in tech. So that's where you just have to pay attention, right, to what you're doing. Some colleges will prioritize first-generation students. Some colleges prioritize a certain religion. Others can prioritize students who are in the military.
Well, I think, too, you brought up something like this gender diversity along with like the major, right? It's like, oh, well, we've got a lot of, if you're a male who wants to major in elementary education, that's fantastic because they want more male teachers, right? Or there's been more female nurses historically. And I think that trend's starting to change or it's starting to get
I think so too better. In nursing.
It's not going to necessarily be a leg up anymore to be a male going in. But, you know, you brought up something about like the geography, because you'll see on college websites, oh, all 50 states and this many countries are coming here. A few years back, this is just before COVID, I live in the Cincinnati area, and somebody from the University of Oregon reached out to me and said, hey, we have an institutional priority to get more students from Ohio, and your name keeps coming up as a counselor in the area. I see that you're attending some local college fairs. Could you introduce me to some people at the high school level in your area, which I did. And then she ended up coming out and going to these college fairs. And that was simply because they wanted more students. I don't know if it was Ohio or the Midwest, which were like barely the Midwest, but you know, that was going to give a kid in my area a leg up.
Well, and I definitely see it both with private institutions and public institutions. Many public institutions actually have to have a certain number from their state because they receive state funding. But many are also seeking outside, like, you know, kids from other states because of the money. But in a private way, you still see it. Like, I'm in the heart of what I always say is college crazy land. I live in Fairfield County, you know, Connecticut. We're an hour from New York City. This is an area where the vast majority of students who go to these public schools go on to four-year universities and pretty selective ones. So people are always like, well, it gets really hard if you're from Fairfield County to get into schools. And I was like, not necessarily. It depends on where you want to go. There are certain places who would like to get students from Fairfield County. And in the same way, you know, there's colleges in California that don't really necessarily want kids who are from next door, you know,
right?
Because they don't necessarily need them, some private schools. So it really is, it's maybe seeking out places that need you, which is really what it comes down to fill their diversity and to fill their geographic want for kids from different areas. But that said, you also have to think about just because they're maybe easier to get in, is that where you want to be?
I love that.
Maybe a kid from Cincinnati doesn't want to be out in Oregon, or maybe a kid from Fairfield County, I don't know, doesn't want to be in the middle of the country because maybe they want to be next door.
Right. Absolutely. Now, you brought up, you know, the needs of the university, right? And I think, like you said, intuitively, We all know that if the football team needs a quarterback for next year, or they know in 2 years they're going to need a good quarterback, they're going to really be looking to that quarterback that's the star athlete could probably have their pick of whatever major that they would like and be able to get into that university if they're going to fulfill that particular institutional priority. That one's kind of a no-brainer to everybody, right? What would be like a lesser known institutional priority that you feel right now in 2024 is having a fairly big impact on who's getting in?
So I don't think that most people realize that it's really enrollment management that drives decisions way more than acceptance rates. And to give you an example of what I mean by that, an enrollment manager's job is to figure out what number of students they need in a class and to get the college to that number of students when they're done with the admission cycle. And what is happening lately is everyone's talking about applications have been up. Applications have been up everywhere. Well, actually, they're kind of leveling out at a lot of the highly selective schools. And what's happened is now colleges like Boston University, Johns Hopkins, they are taking about a third fewer students than they took just 2 or 3 years ago. So that's why those colleges are getting so much harder to get into. There's also colleges like the College of Charleston that have gotten so much more popular. And yes, their apps have gone up, but they also now have a problem where they don't have enough housing for students. So they have to take fewer apps. The last sort of piece of that enrollment management that I think is really crucial for families to understand is it's often about when you're applying, not just that you're applying. So what I mean by that is many colleges can be easier in early action or early decision than they are in a regular round. Colleges like Middlebury and Emory last year accepted 70 to 80% of their class in the early rounds. Places like Penn State filled up their entire University Park campus this year in the early round. So what ends up happening is literally a college that can be, you know, in reach if you apply early. And it doesn't even necessarily mean that you're applying ED, which is binding, but just early, can then become completely out of reach in the regular round because they've kind of filled up their class. And I think people only sort of associate that with rolling admission schools, and it's not that. It's with all colleges.
Yeah, well, because that meets, they know, it gives them an assurance that they're going to meet their budget. I mean, if they miss that number mark by, and I've heard other episodes and other podcasts, we haven't talked about it, but you miss that enrollment mark by 50 students of what they want to yield for a freshman class, the financial impact can be significant at the university. So it makes sense why.
Well, and this is the whole thing. It goes back to colleges are businesses. They have to operate like businesses. This is not about kids. This is not personal. This is business.
It's like, how do we depersonalize this for our families? Because it does feel highly personal when these are rolling out. And we know it's like, no, you could have been successful there, but you didn't meet, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Well, so first of all, that's a really hard question, right? And every kid's a little different. But I will say this, we, in our business, I try really hard to build lists that are not just chance of admission, but that the decisions are going to come back at different times. And so when kids get decisions earlier, it helps, but it can also assure them, okay, I'm into a school I already like.
I have a place to go.
So I have a place to go, and it takes the pressure off a little bit. So all of our students have schools that rolling colleges where they can find out early in the fall. They might have some EA schools where they'll hear back before Christmas time. And we adjust lists accordingly. I also, Meg Joyce, who works with me at Admissions Village, has a great saying. She goes, lead with your likelies. I've been trying to encourage all of our families to fall in love with schools that are really still going to be attainable for them. And some of my favorite institutions in this country are not that selective. And so what I've tried to do is when they go off to these super selective places, it's human nature. You get caught up into, I need to go to a selective school. It must be better because it's selective. And no, everyone, full disclosure, those colleges are not better just because they're selective. They're just more selective. And so what we try to do is get our families to visit schools that are more obtainable first. because sometimes the first schools you visit are the ones you fall the most in love with.
Oh, I like that. So it's not only having a balanced list, but why don't you visit those more reachable schools, the more likely schools first, so that your kid is falling in love with them and feeling good about it. And, you know, I think about my own kids. Because I did do that, I visited some campuses that were likely, that I also knew were fit in many other ways early, but then going back and doing a second visit with them after they started to see the bright, shiny objects as well, to say a reminder of how good this other one was that you saw early on. But this idea of the balanced list and having some rolling, I like that. Make sure you have like rolling school on there. I've not really practiced that before, but one of the things I've always practiced is, if I have a student who's like, oh my gosh, I need to get out of state, I just want to go away, which a lot of kids say, and then it's funny when push comes to shove and it's down to the wire at the end, a lot of them end up staying pretty close to home. So parents, don't fret if your kid's saying they want to go to Hawaii. They may really change their mind greatly. I see that a lot. But I always say to everybody, you have to have an in-state public that you like, and I'm in Ohio, so we have a ton of in-state publics, right? We have a ton of public universities and private universities. So we have a lot of options. So somebody might be in Nevada and going like, we don't have a lot of options, Lisa, but somewhere close to home that's affordable, because I've also found like sometimes things happen, like a job loss in a family or a health crisis in a family. And that could be the reason why there's either a financial impact or just an emotional desire to be closer to home. And occasionally those kids will be like, oh, I'll just throw Ohio State or Cincinnati or Miami on the list. And I'm like, but you gotta, just what you said, you gotta love that likely that's in your backyard as well. Not just say like, okay, check, I've got the school that will give me the in-state tuition, in building that list.
But first of all, you're very fortunate in Ohio, because I love all of those three schools that you just named, right? Yeah. I am particularly partial, because I'm a horseback rider, to Miami of Ohio. Full disclosure, has phenomenal riding facilities. So I was like, I could happily live here.
And it's a beautiful campus.
It's beautiful. It's sunny and happy. Like, I definitely think that there's vibe of campuses. Some of them just have more of a happy feel. I think that's a happy place, you know? And so, yeah, I'm a huge fan. But I think not everyone, I agree with you, has a perfect sort of in-state, but I love what you said. Things change. Mm-hmm. And that's why I do like kids to have some likely options pretty early on, because I also think sometimes kids have to sit with whatever has happened. And sometimes they sit with it. What I have been excited about is I have really been pushing our families to go to likely schools. Also, because I think as part of enrollment management, colleges consider demonstrated interest, sometimes even when they don't say they consider demonstrated interest, and a visit is the best way that you can show interest, whether it's online or in person. Showing them some love is important. But what I keep getting excited about in our practice is parents keep coming back and going, I was so impressed by blah, blah, blah. Like, I didn't expect that. And I'm like, yes, that's true.
That's why they pay you to give good advice.
Right. Yes. And I was like, yes, I wasn't lying when I told you to buy the plane ticket to go there.
Absolutely. Well, you brought something up. You know, you said that you like the fact that I said, hey, things might change for your kiddo or your family during this process. I also think that brings us to the idea that what's an institutional priority today is not necessarily the institutional priority tomorrow. And that's another thing that also changes.
100%. So I think really hot button topic was that, you know, people needed certain kids in certain majors. They wanted women in engineering or men in nursing. And that's kind of changed.
That's right.
Those things have evened out quite a bit at colleges. So it's not so much of a priority. That's exactly the point. And I think institutional priorities change all the time. I think as certain schools become more selective, they can do things differently. And that comes down often to a college's yield, which for people who don't know the term, means that the students that they've accepted, the rate at which those students accept them.
Yes. And meets the budget. Then it gets
meets
back
the budget.
The budget.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, that's the enrollment and the budget piece. Now, We've run through a bunch of them. Like, they need to manage their enrollment. They've got the special interests of athletics teams, bands, debate teams, majors, economic, racial diversity. Are there any of them that we're missing that might be? Those are the tops of mind one. And I know your blog really actually takes a deep dive on all of them. So we'll definitely link to that in the show notes. The thing that got us started down this path months ago. What are we missing?
I think kind of gotten through a lot of them. I do. I think that piece of colleges must balance their budgets gets very sort of large when you start thinking about it. At certain colleges, I feel like they are prioritizing Pell eligible or low income students. And at other colleges, I think they probably simply can't afford you.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of have to have that in play. I get that a lot with our pro bono kids, not really understanding some of the decisions that come back. And I'm like, again, this wasn't about you. This might be the fact that the college couldn't afford you.
It's like buying a house. Like, you get pre-qualified for a home and there's a certain amount that you're going to qualify for and you just can't, you know, that's an analogy that maybe makes that make a little more sense, right?
Right. And I think some colleges really will prioritize full pay students, where at other schools, it doesn't quite speak, you know, it doesn't help them in the same way. I think some colleges, you know, will use merit aid, a tuition discount, which is basically what that is. And they prioritize accepting students, you know, that way. So there's so much that comes into play with enrollment management, which is all of this, because part of enrollment management is balancing budgets.
So if I'm a parent navigating this with my first or second kid, and I'm thinking like, okay, that's all well and good. I can manage my students' expectations around how this works, which is one of the first things we want them to do. Is there a way that you suggest, how would a family find out what a particular college's institutional priorities are, or can they, you know, as we're kind of bringing this into home plate?
So I think that colleges clue you in. I think that, first of all, if you look at their mission statement, they give you a pretty good idea of their culture and what they're looking for. I think if you look at their past announcements, for, you know, they often announce like, this was our admissions rate, this is what our class is, they're cluing you in. As an example, and even just really deep diving into their website, Tulane has a lot of institutional priorities like everywhere else. And Tulane 5 years ago had a very white admission staff. If you look today, they have a very diverse admission staff. They now post a lot of the times on their website, you know, on their announcements of their admissions decisions, they post, we have X number of Hispanic students, we have X number of first generation students are Pell eligible. They have put their money behind this, their institutional priorities, because they have now offer a huge amount of scholarship money to local Louisiana students who are underserved. So I think they have clued you in that those have become institutional priorities for them in a way that they weren't before. I think when you go to colleges, if they put a lot of pressure on you to ED, that might be signaling to you that that is an institutional priority for them to enroll students early. So I kind of say colleges really clue you in a lot during the admissions process. Believe them. Start listening to what they're telling you. And then, you know, listen to things like your podcast will really help some families to figure that out too. Educate yourself. Knowledge is power in this process. And I think there are a lot of fantastic free resources for families out there. And you should be educating yourself during this process, especially the parents. It will help you.
Oh, that's such great advice. Yeah. And I think this idea of just pausing and taking time to really dig deep in your words, it's out there. But a lot of times when they go to the website, they're just looking at the admissions page for admission stats, deadlines, go over to financial aid and look at scholarships. But you're really going to get to know the college if you start taking time to go through and look deeper. You know, I advise my families that are in my college major and career coaching course that they should, by halfway through sophomore year, have at least a 30-minute college-bound meeting with their teen every weekend. And if something's bumping that, find time. There's always something to do, as you and I know, literally from about the midpoint of sophomore year all the way up until you're enrolling. It could be, let's just talk about where we're going to visit. Let's look at a website together. If they're doing test prep, planning their test dates. If they're doing my course, using that time to do the course for to get college major discernment down. There's always something to do. And so slowing down and creating the space, the information's out there, and it's going to set you up for better outcomes.
Such great advice. For me, the key to really great outcomes for students in this process, and I don't necessarily think a great outcome is getting into the most selective school. I think it's getting into the school that's the best fit for a student. But to me, the key to great outcomes is college research. And it goes beyond just visiting the school. And I have a very hard time convincing families of this all the time, but I see it in the results every year.
And it takes time and intention.
Well, Allie, takes time and attention.
You have been very generous with the information and the time. If our listeners want to learn more about you, we're going to link to the blog, but how do they find out about your practice and how you guys work with families?
Our website, admissionsvillage.com. I'm happy. We offer a free consultation and you can just reach out to us through there.
Awesome. Thanks, Allie.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
And there you have it, a deep dive into the intricate world of universities, institutional priorities, and how they shape the college admissions process. I hope you found our conversation with Allie Beaumont insightful and empowering as you navigate this complex journey with your teen. As we wrap up, I want to leave you with a practical action step. Choose one college your teen is interested in and do a deep dive on the university website. Explore what the school values, hypothesize what their institutional priorities might be, and consider how these align with your teen's goals and aspirations. Engaging in this discussion as a family can provide valuable insights and help your teen make informed decisions about their college journey. Remember, understanding these priorities is critical to building the best college list and applying at the right time. So take the time to explore, discuss, and plan accordingly. If you want more practical college-bound advice, follow the podcast and do me a favor. Share it with a friend who can benefit from it too. I'm Lisa Marker Robbins, and I thank you for listening to College and Career Clarity, where we help your family move from overwhelmed and confused to motivated, clear, and confident about your teen's future.